Suppose we consider all those things. We certainly look at risk. Modeling risk is important to do. The fat tail risk refers to the fact that risk in financial markets is typically not a normal distribution. The tails of a distribution are heavier, and the inside is not as heavy. So understanding that is real important. You know, we look at everything we possibly can and analyze everything we can. And so far, we've gotten it reasonably right. Another question.
Do you consider high-frequency trading to be socially useful? And if so, how much?
Okay. The question was, do I consider high-frequency trading to be socially useful? And if so, how much? How much can you make at it, or how you... how useful? I consider high-frequency trading to be natural and definitely socially useful. What's happened is that as the markets have become electronic and computers have been applied to generating prices and accepting trades and all the rest, the markets have grown tremendously more liquid. Spreads have come down. The bid-ask spreads have come down. The fellows who used to be, you know, the specialists on the floor, specialists of old, they were supposed to be the market makers, you know. Well, they were full of baloney, and they would create very wide spreads. And at the first sign of trouble, they would disappear. With the electronic trading has come the ability to trade fast, and that has brought spreads down, and it has brought market impact down. So there's two things that happens when you buy a stock. One thing, you pay a little, typically, you will pay a little bit above the mid-price, just as if you sell it, you'll sell it for a little bit below the mid-price. But the other thing that happens is, infinitesimally perhaps, you move the market. Well, if you buy 100 shares, you're probably not going to move the market. But if you buy 100,000 shares, you probably are going to move the market. Well, how much are you going to move it? Well, if you're the only buyer out there, you're going to move it a heck of a lot. But if there's a lot of buyers and if there aren't any sellers, but if there's a lot of people active in that market, 100,000 shares might go very easily. So the more volume, the better. And it's volume that's been created by these high-frequency traders. So I think the research shows that the costs of trading, spreads, and market impact have come down a great deal, and it's all due to high-frequency traders. So is it socially useful? Well, if you think highly liquid markets are socially useful, then I think so. Will there ever be glitches? There could be. There was a glitch. I think they called it the flash crash of a few months ago. And for 8 minutes or so, some market took a dive, and it came right back. I mean, it came right back. No, but I mean, it's an important point. In 1987, when the stock market crashed, it went down 25% in half a day, and it didn't recover for 6 months. Because there was nobody there on the other side. This thing recovered, this flash crash recovered, because someone had made a mistake, I presume. Some kind of order went in that was much too big. There was nervousness in the market. It was already down 3%. And it took a dive. And everyone stood back and said, oh, my God, what's going on? Well, but then the algorithms kicked in, and you know, all this trading just came back, and this thing disappeared in 10 minutes. So, it was a little destabilizing, but it was a whole lot different from the crash of 1987. So that's a long answer to a short question. Yes, I think high speed trading is socially useful, and I think that the people who argue against it are wrong.
I was wondering how the few years of fundamental trading that you had done when you first started Renaissance influenced the modeling that you did
Oh, how do they influence the model?
Yeah, would you have built your models very differently, you think, had you not had a trading experience?
Okay, how did my experience in fundamental trading affect the models that that gradually got built? I think that they taught us something. The early models that we built were pretty crude, and I think we're inspired by just sort of looking at what we'd seen. Being in the markets is a good way to observe them. You really look at them when you have something riding on them. So I would say it was influential. But I think so. I think it's a good thing for anybody to do, even if he's a quant, to get some experience in just, trading something. But did that answer your question? Okay, one more.
So my question is, what kinds of things should people in the public be paying attention to among the economic indicators and just things that are going on which are rather bewildering in this world? What are the important things that we should be looking at? Let me just to give it, I mean, a simple example. When I look at the national debt, it sort of looks like maybe it's twice everybody's salary. That's how much they owe, or will need to pay off, or something. I don't know. I mean, bringing it down to scale. But for a normal person, how do you interpret what's going on? How do we interpret those $65 billion in CDOs?
Yeah, I understand. I understand. Well, his question is, the economy, not only in the United States, but in the world, looks kind of unbalanced, unsettled. There's big debts being built up by countries, and we have obviously a recession in the United States, and we're busy bailing out banks, and, where's it all going? Where's it all going? Going to hell in a handbasket, or what? And what should we be looking at? Well, I think all the things you mentioned are worth looking at. The national debt as a fraction of GNP was considerably higher even than it is today, right after the Second World War. And we never paid off that debt. What we did was grow the GDP. So the denominator got bigger and bigger, and after a while, we were back in the box. So there's nothing better under most circumstances, in my opinion, than some good growth. And I don't think we're taking steps in the United States to promote that good growth, because I think we should be maybe even printing more money and building infrastructure and doing some things that the country is lagging in, which would get some more people back to work and would put us in a better position to compete, even if we do have some inflation. It's not the worst thing in the world, is inflation. But so I don't think there's any... what happened in this collapse is the United States got a lot poorer. And it got a lot poorer because the value of everybody's house went down. And most of people's net worth was associated to their home. And they had been borrowing against the rising prices in their home, home equity loans. That had fueled a lot of growth. And that came to an end. So we had two bad things happen. People's balance sheets were decimated. They had to, not only couldn't they borrow anymore, but they had to be paying back debt. And a balance sheet disaster is not something that's going to get fixed very fast. It's going to take a number of years, I think, to rebuild from this base. And is the government doing the right thing or the wrong thing? I mean, I'm not a big fan of this government. I'm not a big fan of a tax bill that just passed, except that it was, well, there's a clapper up there. No, there's one clapper. I mean, it made no sense to continue the tax cut for rich guys like me. That made no sense whatsoever. And for some of you out here, probably it didn't make much sense. But if that was the price to pay, as it apparently was, because we have a rather timid president, That was the price to pay for extending the unemployment and making some other, you know, and keeping the tax cuts for less affluent people. And one thing or another, it wasn't the worst thing in the world. So it looks like maybe it'll produce a little extra growth. But that's what we need. We do need growth. And my own view is I'd rather have it at the risk of inflation than have no growth and say we've held the value of our dollar. Who gives it? Who cares if everyone's out of work? You got 20% unemployment. Got a wonderful dollar is not going to be so helpful. Okay. Any way over there. Look at that guy. He's hiding.
Insofar as there was something wrong with some of the models, evidently not the ones that you use, but others. what were some of the key things wrong with what was going on with some of the models?
You're talking about the long-term economic modeling that the
quant attributed to quants that some have said was an important part of meltdown.
Oh, that was wrong. The quant models had nothing whatever to do with the financial meltdown, as far as I can see. What had to do with the... Well, financial meltdown was based on mortgages being created that were no damn good. And they were created because there was a market for them. So these subprime mortgages, you lend money to people that you would never, if you were the lender, you would never dream of lending money under these circumstances. On the other hand, if your uncle said, don't worry, you lend it and I'll buy the paper, you might say, well, okay, uncle, if you say you'll buy the paper, I'll lend the money. You lend the money, buy the paper, sell the paper to the uncle. This paper got securitized and at the end of the day, stamped AAA. Now, who the hell did that? The rating agencies stamped this paper AAA, and they stamped the AAA either because they were idiots, which I think is largely the case, but also because their fees were paid by the issuers of this rotten paper, who wouldn't have issued it in the first place if they didn't expect to get AAA, and this whole chain, I mean, you know, in the old days, you would go to the bank, really old days, you go to the bank, you want to buy a house, the bank actually was the one who lent you this money. The bank was going to hold the mortgage, the bank was going to service the mortgage, and the bank wanted you to pay. So the banks were, you know, but now a bank loans you the money for a microsecond, and they sell it to the next guy. So it had very little to do with quant models. It's true that quants were designing these packages of mortgages, but the underlying statistics, what's the probability that this mortgage is going to get paid, or what's the probability that a guy who's had 7 jobs in 8 years in 4 different cities and who has simply stated that he earns, whatever, what's the probability that he's really going to pay off his mortgage? Anyone with common sense, see common sense is up there, would think it's pretty darn close to zero. But that fact was not taken into account in the underlying statistics. So that's a long answer. We'll do one more, I think.
Lucky me. When creating models to trade the markets, would you recommend focusing on creating models around fundamental economic data or on price behavior such as the S&P 500 or oil, gold, or a combination of both? Thank you.
I mentioned Warren Ambrose in my beginning of my talk, this mathematician who inspired me. I'm actually going to answer your question. And I went to him one day early in my career and I said, Professor Ambrose, I mean really early, is it best to learn a lot about one area of mathematics or learn a little bit about a lot of areas in mathematics? And he looked at me and he said, one can make the cliche either way. And that was the end of a discussion. so there isn't any right answer to the question you asked. All those things are good. It's good to use economic models. It's good to use, price histories. It's good to use make models using all these things, and there isn't any right or wrong to that answer. So.